resolution on each of the 3,000 plus counties in the U.S., including 550 high resolution, full color maps and full color photographs, as well as detailed information and analysis that you need. Get this hard to find information by ordering Food and Place.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion and delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, right now, of course, they're going to be the views of Mr. Robert Wilcox. And we're going to be talking to him about his book, Target Patton. And he's really talking about the murder of General Patton, an assassination that was carried out under the orders of people at the highest levels of our government. And people say, that sounds crazy. Why, that sort of thing couldn't go on. And I will tell you, I've talked to at least four assassins worked for our government. One was a fellow named Frank Dux. One was a gentleman named Chip Tatum, Sidney Colonel Marvin, L.D. Howard. Didn't carry out his assignment. He, of course, was no longer working for the CIA, but he would not kill an American who was vacationing in Mexico with his wife and children. And, of course, that was Terry Reid. He was supposed to kill a man who had written a book about George Bush and Bill Clinton. But this sort of thing really does go on, ladies and gentlemen. We could give you example after example of assassinations that we have directly or indirectly had some contact with. But right now, let's get into this amazing story of the death of General George Patton, certainly one of the greatest fighting generals of the Second World War, if not the greatest fighting general. Mr. Wilcox, thank you very much for being with us.
With you, Dr. Stan.
Well, why don't you pick up this story and tell our listeners, you know, how you came to be studying this. Now, about 3 minutes, we'll bring on some other stations and we'll let you repeat part of it, but you get started telling the story now.
Well, I, like most people, thought that Patton had died as a result of a normal accident, and I have a cousin who is he owns a detective agency and does a lot of international work, and he told me that, Patton had died as a result of an assassination. He had died in 1945 following an accident, an auto accident in Germany, outside of Mannheim, Germany. And so I'm a writer. I'm looking for good stories. That was quite jarring to hear that, and I followed up and what this led me to, ultimately, was a former OSS assassin, Douglas Bezzada, who told me that he had been ordered by the head of the OSS, Wild Bill Donovan, General Wild Bill Donovan, to kill Patton, to do it in any manner he thought he could, and so they staged this accident, which is a way that is often used. Accidents are good ways to assassinate, because if it doesn't work, it's just, it looks like an accident. And he was not killed in the accident. Patton received a broken neck, and as I began to study this thing, let me jump back to the accident itself. It just doesn't make sense. This was really a fender bender that they set up, but Patton gets a broken neck out of it, and the other two people in the car are only they aren't even injured at all. So that's the beginning of the mystery, and I went to the National Archives first of all to check on this Douglas Bezzada, and he turned out to be a sterling fellow. He had won all kinds of awards, probably the most decorated OSS agent. He had been a Jedburgh. He had dropped behind enemy lines following D-Day, and had organized the Maquis. He later on stayed on in Europe and was a top freelance assassin.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment as we bring our other stations on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and certainly our guest this afternoon is Mr. Robert Wilcox. And Mr. Wilcox is a writer, and some years ago he heard from his cousin that the story that most of us have been told and which we believed about the death of George Patton, General George Patton, certainly was not true, and that actually he had actually been assassinated by somebody working for our own government. So Mr. Wilcox set out, and he eventually tracked down a man who claimed he was the assassin. He had worked for the OSS. Mr. Wilcox went to the National Archives and checked the man's story, and certainly it proved to be true as far as his having worked for the OSS and having had a number of escapades, one of the top-notch people working for the government during the Second World War, doing clandestine activity. And, of course, Mr. Wilcox actually was given the diaries, the complete diaries. This gentleman was 85. He had had a stroke. He was on the verge of death. And he wanted, I think, to confess about what he'd done, because I think he'd always felt very bad. But he had been told that Patton had to be killed. He was a bad man. He wanted to take on the Russians. And, of course, he would undo so much of the good that our country was doing by, of course, being an avid anti-communist. So you pick up the story there, Robert.
Well, yes, you've done a great job in giving the motives for this, and they are many, but predominantly that Patton wanted to fight the Russians. He also had secrets that he was going to tell about the conduct of the war and how badly it had been run and how it could have been ended much sooner than it was. And so these are the two outstanding reasons, I think. And Patton was just about ready to go home. It was the day before he was to leave when he had this strange accident. And as I said, it was very mysterious. He's the only one who was injured in it. The other two people in the car are not injured. He's taken to a hospital where he's expected to die, but he rallies, and he does so well. He's about to go home, and then he has a sudden downturn. They say that he died from embolism. He died within 14 hours of that sudden downturn once they'd announced he was going home again. And Douglas Bezzotta, the OSS assassin, who did confess to me that this had happened, and did so because he was 85 and he'd had a stroke, and a lot of things converged. I was lucky to get it that time. He told me that the Russians finished the job. They went in there with into the hospital, which was not a highly guarded hospital.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess, Mr. Robert Wilcox. His book, Target Patton, and I believe we have that in stock. We have several interviews with Mr. Wilcox as well. But right now, of course, he was saying that Mr. Posada, the assassin, told him that he didn't actually kill Patton, but he injured him so badly he was taken to the hospital, and then the Russians filled this off. So apparently we do not have it in stock. It's on order. We're hoping to get it very soon. You go right ahead with that.
Well, yeah, you can get it at Amazon, too, right now. It's doing quite well. But Bezzotta said that, as you said, he did not finish the job. The Russians did so. They were able to kill him, and I don't know exactly how, but either by surreptitiously getting into his room, perhaps injecting him, but something that emulated having an embolism, which could cause a stroke or a heart attack. And years later, one of the Patton grandchildren, an adult at that time, she was in Europe, and she was approached by a Russian colonel who said that they had sprayed something in the room to give him pneumonia, which would have killed him. So This is a part of what we need to find out is exactly how he died, even exhume his body. But another thing that I did was to try and find any reports on this accident, because once the accident occurred, Even though it was on the outskirts of Mannheim, Germany, on a lonely road, I mean, the place was flooded with military people all of a sudden. Even a general was there, and all types of mysterious people. And we know from documents that there were at least two reports made on the accident itself and several investigations. Well, all of these are gone now. They are no longer around. We can't find them. And to me, that's clear evidence of a cover-up. I went to the museum where today they say they have the car in which a Patton was injured. And I thought, gee, that'll be a great thing to go to. And I could sort of see the scene of the crime, see the blood on the car, perhaps tell where he broke his neck. He was supposed to have flown through the air. This was a large Cadillac touring car. It was called a 7733. It was a 1938 car, and it had a lot of room. And when the crash occurred, he was supposedly the one who flew through the air and then crashed his head somewhere, and that broke his neck, and then he fell back on the other passenger. I never did buy that story, and nobody ever really saw this happen because the passenger who was on the other side, the general who was there with him, was actually looking out of that window on the left side. Patton was sitting on the right side, and so he never saw what happened. But
first of all, you don't, with a little fender bender, you don't fly through the air. And it said, you know, and if it had been a serious accident, that at least somebody else would have had a scratch or something, but no damage to anybody else. No,
exactly.
Apparently, no. Was there any serious damage to the car?
Well, it was a fender bender, so to speak. The car actually, instead of hitting head on to this, and I haven't told you yet, but what happened was the car had been stopped at a railroad track. And up ahead, there was this truck waiting up there in the distance. Nobody thought about that at that time, but that's the testimony right now. But once the train went by, this truck, this army truck, started up and started coming towards them on a little two-lane highway. And when it got just about abreast with it, it suddenly turned without any signal at all. The driver did in there without any signal. And then they had the crash, and the crash, instead of hitting head-on to the side of this truck that had turned in front of it, the driver did have time to try and turn the car a little bit, so the impact was right on the right front fender, and that front fender is pretty mangled. Some of the radiator is mangled, but it's not a huge hit. They were only going between 10 and 30 miles an hour, and as you said, all of the three people in the car should have gone forward if that's what happened. As I subsequently had an accident investigator go through this, she told me that given the fact that the car had turned, that the axis of everyone was not straight down the line of the car as has been theorized, which would have thrown him. But Patton was looking out the window, and we know this from some other data, and that he would have actually hit the door that he was of the window that he was looking at. So it doesn't make any sense what the standard explanation has always been. And that, of course, is the beginning of the mystery.
And, of course, when you checked the car that is there in the museum, what did you find? Was there any question that maybe they had a fraudulent car there?
Well, absolutely, and we did not expect that. But the one thing that we were looking for, and I had brought down an expert from Detroit who was the expert on Cadillacs, and specifically on that Cadillac, and on the 38. And the first thing he started to tell me was, well, this is not a 38. It's been rebuilt. It looks, we has a 39 front, and so on and so forth. And then we tried to find the VIN number. And a VIN number is your vehicle identification number. And the police even use it today, and you can use it because it'll always tell you what car you have. It's soldered into the chassis. Well, we found where the VIN number was, but it had been scraped out, scratched out, probably with a file. There's a picture of it in Target Patton, my book. You can see it. Obviously, someone had switched this car. It was, And when he went back and did his final review on everything, he came back and said, this is absolutely not a 1938 Cadillac 7533. It's a rebuilt 39, and that's more evidence to me that why they would have done this. I mean, there are only two choices. Either you do that so that you can take the car and sell it to some surreptitiously to somebody who wants it and will keep it secret all the time, or, as goes along with all this other evidence that's building, this was because they didn't want anyone to see that car, because you could have deduced where he hit himself, where the blood was, and so on. I think it was just removal of the scene of the crime. And so that car is no longer, I believe, and I don't think the museum did this on purpose. I think they were duped as well, although they never did really look deeply into it. But now when you go there, I think they've removed the plaque that says this is the car, and says, and it now says this is a replica of the car. Should I go on?
You go right ahead, yes.
I believe that the accident that occurred in 1945 in December really was the fourth of other attempts to try and kill Patton. There were three other interesting ones. The first one was he was in a Jeep, and how would I describe it? A cart came out of an alley. He was driving by, and it had kind of a scythe on it, which is a tool you use to cut wheat on. And this scythe almost beheaded him, and he was slightly injured in the jolt and so on, but it was nothing much. But there are a lot of rumors that, as a matter of fact, I thought that he was killed in a Jeep accident, and I think that's the source of that one. But that was about 4 months before this major accident. More importantly, there was the one that I think is the most important is Patton, right at the end of the war, was inspecting his troops flying around in a little Piper Cub, and a flight of four Spitfires were said to be Polish Spitfires. Found him, and three of them stayed up circling over him, and one went down and started to shoot at him. And luckily, he had a good enough pilot that was able to evade this this attacking Spitfire, and the Spitfire crashed. And I think that was just an obvious attempt to kill him. There was some Patton was livid, so was his aides, and you could read in the diaries how they say, what the heck's going on here? And we're going to get to the bottom of this. But that's all gone. You get no reports about that or anything. And, of course, the Russians had already taken over Poland by this time. And if it was a Polish Spitfire, it would have been under the command of the Russians. And the Russians did that. That's the way they did all of their surreptitious stuff. They would use the local people under their direction.
Now, of course, let's get a little bit into what the Posada was actually doing. He was actually there at the crash site. He arranged it. Hadn't he actually set up the driver and the truck? And he was there then with a high-powered weapon of some sort to shoot a bolt into it that would hit Patton in the face?
Yes. Posada was there with another fellow who I believe would have been a Russian. Posada called him the Pole, because he had this Middle Eastern, Eastern European accident. But, they had set this thing up, along the road were piles of debris, old broken cars and tanks and this kind of stuff. And they set up at a little area, where they had a bunch of those, stacked cars and so on. And he was behind that, and then they had the truck, which was waiting, and he said he went to the motor pool to some guys who were pretty nefarious, black marketeer type people, and he paid them money and booze and said, he didn't tell them what he was going to do, but he said, I want you to do what happened, that is to cause this accident. I hear your music. Should I stop for a second?
All right, fine. Well, you go right ahead. I'll tell you when to stop.
Okay. This truck, of course, he was on a signal, was to start up, and of course that would have been when they had started up after they waiting for the train. Well, the funny thing is that once this truck hit him, I'm getting ahead of myself, but Bezzotto was about 20 feet away, and Bezzotto is a world-class marksman.
Hold that thought. You're going to have to stop now.
Okay.
All right, you go ahead and pick up this story.
He had gotten, as you said, a specially made rifle. It was air-driven in Czechoslovakia. Somebody in Czechoslovakia had made this for him. And it would shoot a bolt or a rock. And as far as Bezzotto is concerned, it was a bolt. And this would not penetrate the skin, but it would break his neck when he hit it. And at the moment of impact, Bezzotto shot. And I asked him, where did he hit him? He said he hit him right in the face. And Patton is admitted into the hospital with a huge gash right that starts at the break of his nose and goes all the way to the top of his head. You could literally lift up the skin, just as if something hit it and scraped it like that, which goes along with what Bezzotto told me. And in any case, once that bolt hit him, it then goes down into the debris of the wreck. Nobody knows that it's he's not penetrated, and they can go pick that thing up or leave it there. It's just part of the wreck. So that was all planned. So that's pretty much how the accident occurred. Then everybody came, an ambulance came, which came as the result, apparently, of somebody hearing it and then running and going to a local army depot there, and they brought their ambulance over. But before that ambulance came, there were this whole flood of people that came, investigators and military police. And interestingly, the driver of the truck just disappeared. He was just whisked away. And this is a man who had just caused an accident. He just caused the highest-ranking general in Europe to have a broken neck, and they just whisk him away, and he's gone, and nobody ever heard from him again. In the book, Target Patton, I do find out what happened to him, at least where he went and how he died. But Patton had in front of him a jeep which had one fellow in it, a sergeant, and he was to lead them to the hunting place that they were going to on that day. That guy is never comes back to the scene of the wreck, and he couldn't have been more than a minute away from, because he is said in a certain memoir to have been following them, and then he pulled ahead of them just before the accident occurred. So he was only a minute or two ahead, but he also disappeared. So there are all these kinds of mysterious people that came to that accident site, and the disappearance of two of the primary people there. Why did that happen? That's all part of the mystery.
Well, of course, the thing is that if they were involved, why, they certainly would not want to give them an opportunity to come forward. I mean, this is one of the great crimes of the century. I mean, the murder of General George Patton, and, of course, but why? Well, we'll talk about that when we come back, because I think that's so vitally important to understand why people at the highest levels of the American government would want to really murder this leading general who was really responsible for bringing the war to an end as quickly as it did, although he could have gotten the war over long before that and had been blocked at every turn. And I think maybe that's one story they did not want to get out. They did not want the American people to know. An awful lot of boys died for absolutely nothing. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, Mr. Wilcox talked about what had actually happened, and he was told that the assassin had been hiding there in some of the debris by the roadside, and as the car came to a stop because of the accident, the assassin then had an air rifle, fired a bullet, a bolt, you know, just a bolt that hit Patton in the face and snapped his neck, and of course that took him to the hospital. But of course it was the communists who pulled him off, who actually finished him off after that, because the Russians hated Patton because Patton felt that communism was evil and we should have gone to war with the Russians after the Second World War. And of course he was absolutely right, but Patton really thought that he was fighting to defend America. He didn't understand our leaders had an entirely different agenda. What was the motivation that the assassin was told by Mr. Donovan, Wild Bill Donovan, head of the OSS, incidentally a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, you don't bring that out in the book, but what was the motivation? Why did the people in Washington, D.C. want to murder one of our leading generals?
Well, as you've pointed out, he wanted to start a war with the Russians, and we'd just been through the worst war in the history of the world. Nobody wanted to do that, and he was angry. He knew what the Russians were up to. They just carved out a piece of Eastern Europe and took it. And he often said, he said, we've liberated Europe from one scourge and given them a worse one. So he wanted to go home and really agitate for that. He was going to write a book and tell all he knew about the war, but mostly he was going to agitate against the Russians and try to get the American people to go to war with them. And, you know, he was like third or fourth on the popularity poll. He easily could have been elected a senator. He might even have become a president. And the other thing is that he knew secrets about the war which were unbelievable. He knew how, he really was responsible for us winning that war in Europe. He had come right after D-Day. He had roared through France. He kicked the Germans right out of France. He had them on their heels. He had them defeated. And right at the German border, he was stopped. And actually, there had been an entire plot to stop Patton. And this is historical fact. They didn't want Patton. They thought he was kind of a hothead. They knew how he didn't like the Russians. The administration at that time was very pro-Russian. And they just wanted to stop him. They stole his gas. And they stopped him right there at the border of Germany, and he could have gone in, and the war probably could have been over in September or October of 44. That's 8 or 9 months before the war really was over. But Eisenhower, being one of those, he stopped him. Eisenhower favored Montgomery, the British general, who constantly made blunders and who was very slow in plotting. Anyway, Eisenhower took Patton's gas and gave it to Montgomery as part of a plan for Montgomery to go in and finish the war off and capture Berlin. It was the ill-fated bridge too far at Arnhem, and that failed. And the Germans will tell you themselves that they would have been defeated if Patton had been allowed to go on. But he was stopped. They were able to regroup. And, of course, they came back at the end of 44 and hit us in the Battle of the Bulge, and it was the same people that were in disarray, the same Germans who were in disarray, but they were able to get back, and they almost kicked us off of France again if it hadn't have been for Patton and some great paratroopers who held out at Bastogne. And Patton came to Eisenhower's aid again and saved him from that colossal blunder. Earlier at the Falaise Gap, Patton wanted to surround. He was ready to close that gap in the middle of France, which would have again killed those same Germans who he was kicking out of France. But Montgomery was given the overall command, and Montgomery said, "No, I'm going to close the gap." Montgomery didn't do it. This was all because of what Eisenhower had told him, "You're the commander, not Patton." And so those kinds of secrets never got out. They still, to this day, are not known. And if they had, I don't think Eisenhower would have ever been elected president. We could have ended the war 8 months earlier. Think of the Americans that would have been saved. Think of all the people that would have been saved. And that was Patton's, one of his main things that he was mad about.
Well, I think with good justification. You see, basically, of course, they had the tanks, and the tanks can't run without gasoline, and they actually took the gasoline away from him because they didn't want to end the war. And of course, I'd spent a lot of time personally with General Albert Wedemeyer, who was in charge of planning for the Second World War, and that was the message he told me. You know, they were doing everything they could to slow down any effort to end that war early, and an awful lot of boys died, tragically. For absolutely nothing. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest is Mr. Robert Wilcox. His book is Target Patton, and it's a wonderful read, a wonderful story, and he's done a tremendous amount of work tracking down this gentleman who has actually been assigned to kill Patton, and of course it started out to stop Patton, and then pretty soon he was actually told, for in all intents and purposes, to kill General Patton. That was the plan, and it was actually General Donovan who gave the order?
Yes. Donovan gave the order, and I think this plan morphed. It went from stop Patton to kill Patton. And in the Bezzada diaries, which were he wrote over a period of years in the 70s, he agonizing over all of this. It's very interesting. He has 8 meetings, which go from the stop Patton through the kill Patton, and the last meeting is the one in which he's told to kill Patton, and Donovan asks him to meet him. They go to a restaurant in London, and Donovan tells him, he says, "Oh, Douglas, we've got this terrible problem. This great patriot, he's done so much for us, but now he's crazy and he's threatening to undo everything that we've done, and we must stop him." And Bezzada says, "Well, how should we do that?" And Donovan says, "However you feel is the way to do it. Do you mean kill him, sir?" "Yes, Douglas, you must do what you must do." And this is it's very detailed in the diaries, and it was one of the things that really swayed me, because I don't think Bezzada could have made this up in the detail that he did. And so that's what happened. Now, in addition to finding Bezzada, I also was able to find Stephen Skubic, who was a CIC agent. That was a counterintelligence corps who was with Patton at the time all this is going on. And just before Patton's accident, Skubic, who is dealing secretly with Russian spies into the Russian NKVD, he is told at the highest levels of these people that that there has been an order by Stalin to kill Patton. And Skubic is told by 3 different high-level Ukrainian freedom fighters, nationalists, including Stepan Bandera, who's famous for that, that this was the case. And he goes back and he tries to stop it, but he's ultimately put in front of Donovan, and Donovan...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Mr. Robert Wilcox, and of course we're talking about his book, Kill Patton, or Target Patton. And of course he'd come across another gentleman named Skubic, I believe it was, who'd worked with the CIA. That was a criminal investigation. And, of course, this man told a very, very similar story. It was not about the assassination, but that he had been in contact with the Russians, and the Russians had told him, you know, that they were planning on killing Patton, and he goes back and he tries to get this information out that Russians are trying to kill Patton. And what happened to this gentleman?
He was first thrown in jail, and then finally he was threatened with his life. He was going to be killed, and he literally had to leave Germany, and he lived this way for 5 years, worried that he was going to be murdered because of what he'd known and what he'd tried to stop.
In other words, he'd tried to stop the murder of George Patton, and Mr. Donovan, the head of the OSS, wouldn't hear anything about it?
That's exactly what he writes in his book, which he wrote for his children, which I found, and of course now I was in contact with the children and everything, the children being adults now. And one thing that's very important to realize here is that both Bezzada and Skubic ended their careers in very high fashion. Bezzada ended his professional career as an aide to John Lehman, the former Secretary of the Navy under Reagan, and also one of the members of the 9/11 Commission. And Skubic himself became a Republican staffer who worked for everyone up to Reagan. So these men are not people that you can just sneeze at. These are very credible people, and the story they tell is just so incredible. But they are very, very sterling. Of course, Bezzada himself is quite a story. His whole life, as he stayed on in Europe as a clandestine, he did so under the cover of being an artist and also he was the manager of one of the Mumm growing areas, Mumm Champagne. And he was such a great artist that he was touted by all the jet set and had special showings by Princess Grace of Monaco and the Duke and Duchess of Windsor. Now, getting back to this OSS-NKVD connection, that is quite an interesting thing. And also, who gave Donovan the order? Well, I don't know who gave Donovan the order, but FDR was in charge. And when we go back and look at what was going on at that time, the OSS had made a liaison with the NKVD in 1943. They had come together. Not many people know this, but the two intelligence services were working hand in hand. However, the NKVD didn't really need to do that. The OSS did. The OSS figured, well, Russia's so close to the Nazis that we can get great. If we work together, we'll get much better success. But the NKVD had already infiltrated our American government, and this was incredibly infiltrated at every level of government. Even in FDR's own office, there were paid communist agents there. We'd all heard that from McCarthy, and McCarthy has been vilified, but only in recent years has Venona come to light. Venona was our breaking of the Russian codes during the war, and they've kept that secret until the late 90s. And now these Venona, we could read the actual traffic between the NKVD here in America sent back to Moscow, and it names all these top-level paid agents. Remember Alger Hiss? Where the biggest stink about him, whether or not he was even a communist sympathizer, he was a paid agent. Lawrence Dugan in the State Department, Harry Dexter White in Treasury, Laughlin Curie, who was an aide to FDR himself. All of these are paid agents. Donovan, one of Donovan's chief aides, was a paid agent. It was daily. His name was Lee, Duncan Lee. He was sending back dispatches. Whatever Donovan did was being sent back in secret code to Moscow. Well, he did this today and so on. All of these things, the left has made such a myth out of what they call the Red Scare and how terrible it was. McCarthy didn't know the half of it. It was much worse than he said it was. All this is documented now by reading their codes. We know who those... last night I watched on PBS a documentary about Oppenheimer and what a poor soul he was and how he was vilified unjustly and everything. Oppenheimer was at least a person giving the Russians information. It's very probable that he was a paid agent. I can't say that for sure. But we know that now through Venona, and all this is a myth. But when you look back at the time of Patton, this is what Patton was up against. He was up against a FDR and an administration that believed that the Russians and that Stalin were these wonderful people. They knew how the world should run as a socialist entity. That's the way the good world will be. And that Stalin was a great peacemaker. And so you can understand how they would look at Patton, who hated Stalin, who publicly called Stalin's best general an SOB, and constantly was going against his own government. They could not have him going back home and doing and turning what they believed was essential, that we be good friends with the Russians, and turning our people against us.
Well, it's a tragic part of our story that most Americans don't know, and they don't want to know that there could have been this sort of thing going on behind the scenes. But fortunately, and sort of work I do talking to many people, you know, whether it be the assassination, the murder of Martin Luther King, or Bobby Kennedy, or Jack Kennedy, or talking to some of these assassins, and a certain number of the people that actually have been my guests here have been assassinated. One of them named Gary Webb, actually committed suicide. We're told he shot himself in the head twice to be sure he was dead. Now, anybody who really believes that story has got to be incredibly gullible, but this is the sort of thing that goes on in the real world, and we have to face it, and we have to understand, from my point of view, that there really is organized evil, and sometimes it extends to the highest levels of our society, or perhaps even to the highest level of our government. Well, you certainly have done a great job of tracking down this story. You talked to so many people associated with General Patton, and certainly not only the one man, but the other fellow from the CIC who actually tried to get the story out. Now, was the book that he wrote actually ever published, or was it just written for his children?
Well, it was. He self-published it. And I must say, it's very badly written. It's just not a good book, and I can see that anyone who ever picked it up, it was never published for public consumption, but there are volumes of it around, and I got it from his children. And to me, it was a great, great document, because as badly as it was written, it gave the whole story, and it gave names and places and events. And they were jumbled up because he just wasn't a writer. He was a detective. That's what he was. The CIC was like the FBI of the army, but it had real powers in those days. They could even execute people. The most famous CIC agent was Nixon's escaping my name right now. Nixon's foreign policy guy.
You mean Henry Kissinger?
Henry Kissinger. Kissinger was a CIC agent. You had to be a man who spoke the languages over there in Eastern Europe. You also had to be a person who was involved in a lot of clandestine stuff. And in any case, no, that book was not greatly published, but you could find it. And now his sons, his children, have put it on a website because there are other researchers who are interested in this thing. And I must say, Dr. Stan, what you just said about a lot of people don't know about the assassins and so on, I myself was pretty naive when I went into this thing. But I have to admit that I was shocked at what Bezzotta told me, but I have since then seen a lot more of this. And this does not get out to people, because nobody wants to hear this. And nobody is going to hear it, because your rank and file, the historians don't follow this thing through. The reason that Patton's accident is always described as an accident is that historians have never done the work that I did. They do these wonderful books of biography, and they come to the end, and they don't want to do the two more years or three more years of hard work before they see the fruits of their labor, because everybody says, well, it was just an accident, and they can, you know, you can find some documentation. Any good assassination, if it's really done right, they already plant all this stuff so that the historians won't find it unless they dig and dig and dig and dig and dig. The only reason I found it was because of you know, seeing these mysteries mount. And while all of the documents are gone, they can't pull stuff out of another document which mentions, for instance, that there was a report done. They couldn't get that out. You can't do everything. And that's what I began to find. And that began to put me on the trail of, well, if this document mentions one, well, who did it? And it mentions their name. Then I can go back and track these people down. So it's not anything that anyone is going to get from the and especially the mainstream press. I mean, it's a joke now. When I started in journalism, I mean, we were newspaper people, and we were taught by hard-driven rewrite guys. You go in there and you find the name and you go back there, and I mean, it was intimidating. Today, it's all television news people, and they are really face men. They don't go out and do the hard work that must be done. If you want to know anything about anything, you must read books. You must dig, dig, dig. And thank goodness that you do things that you do, Dr. Stan, because you're telling people what's out there that they're not finding.
Well, what we need to do is get people to understand that they live in one world, but you and I live in the other, in the real world, and it is a world of violence and betrayal, and the fact that they would even consider killing a key American officer, and yet who had served this country valiantly and bravely, and then, of course, cast aside at the end. Well, unfortunately, this is the way sometimes the world really works. Now, Cynthia, as you've been getting this story out, what sort of response have you got when you get onto a radio and tell the story?
Well, I've gotten nothing but good response. I did have one guy who sent an email to my site, which, by the way, is www.robertkwilcox.com. He apparently is a Russian, and he heard the show. He heard the show in Russia, I guess. And he said, "Now I know that Stalin was right when he said, and I got to be careful about this, that all Americans are what you find in the toilet." That he used different words, but he tried to hedge it that way too. This guy was mad at me, but I think he was mad because I had dared to say that the Russians might have been involved in this. Other than that guy, I'm getting 4 or 5 letters a day telling me, thank you for this, we always suspected this, and so on. If that's what you're talking about, the response has been very good. It's touched the nerve. A lot of people believe that it wasn't just this normal accident. And by the way, there are other ones, you know, I don't know what you know, but in doing this, I've come upon other questionable deaths. One big one is the Secretary of the Navy.
Frank Knox.
Pardon?
Frank Knox?
No, under Truman.
All right.
And again, the name is just escaping me, but I'll think of it in a second. But he died under very mysterious circumstances. So did McCarthy, as a matter of fact.
Right.
McCarthy was put into a hospital. You know, putting into a hospital is a great way, and that's why...
I think he was put in the same hospital as the Secretary of the Navy. They both died in the same hospital.
I wonder if that's the truth. I think you're right.
I think you're right.
Forrestal.
I'm sorry, Forrestal.
Forrestal was the guy, and Forrestal's is really weird. He is up on a 10th floor, and he's protesting that he's not crazy. You know, Forrestal was like Patton. He was against the Russians. He did not want us to be friends with the Russians. And Forrestal is suddenly he's found on the bottom of this in the courtyard, and they say he jumped. And his brother to this day says he didn't jump. That there's no way it would have happened that way. But that's another one that I came upon while researching this one. And I did try to find out, but that could be another book as to that kind of thing happening.
Well, I look forward to it. But, you know, Forrestal had a diary. And that they would never release the diary. They would release the a book written by somebody who read the diary, but that diary was declared top secret and went to the archives. And has it ever been released now?
I don't think it has. I think there's been, you know, Patton's diaries and his book, War as I Knew It, both were edited. And I have letters from very pro-Russian people in the administration who wrote to Mrs. Patton afterwards saying, you can't print this. It'll just cause utter chaos. I don't know what she did. I don't know what happened. But I do know that the Library of Congress will tell you that they don't have the last diaries from him. They only have, and the The Library of Congress gentleman whom I worked with, he told me, you know, we're always at a disadvantage because always they withhold certain things, the families do, who give us these things. And so we can't tell you what's missing from here, but we know something's missing. So that happened in both Patton's book. I don't believe the book that came out, War as I Knew It, is the one that he wrote. I think it's an edited version of what he wrote. And as you say, Forrestal's diaries, I don't believe have ever... I believe there's an edited version of them, but I don't believe that the ones that are top secret have ever been released.
Well, I hope you can get them. I have the edited version, but certainly they never could let the American people know the truth. You commented on one of our earlier programs that your book has been very well received. It's been written up in the newspapers over in Europe. And hardly a word here in the mainline media newspapers here in America. Why would that be?
Well, that's baffling to me. But I don't know who told Donovan to do this. But we can certainly look at the fact that there's a huge gap. Donovan only took his orders from the president and from the Joint Chiefs. So this points a finger at the FDR administration and the Truman administration. And the historians have, you know, love those two administrations. So they buy the idea that it was just an accident. And, all I can say is that this is a story they don't want told.
Amen. It's one of the greatest stories ever not told, and I'm so glad that you told it and got the information out. Our guest has been Mr. Robert Wilcox. I will tell you, we've had nothing but trouble with the people there at Regnery who published your book, as far as they will not return our calls. So you're going to have to go to Amazon.com, I'm afraid, unless you want to get the interview with us. Well, Robert, we've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program, and we did send you a copy of my book. I hope when you get it, you'll take the time. I know how busy you are, but you can read it.
I'm reading it. It's great. I'm in the middle of it right now.
All right, fine. Well, it's, of course, we're trying to get you to read the very end of it, because that's what it's really
about. I will.
All right. And maybe it'll answer some of the questions as to why these things are happening, because so much of what's going on just doesn't make any sense. And anyway, of course, what were your parting thoughts you'd like to leave with our listeners out across America?
Well, I'd like to say that this is a great mystery. And while I believe that if I were to take this to not a court of law,
but a grand jury.
A grand jury, I could get an indictment. I can't say that I could get a conviction with a jury, but let the reader decide. But as you've been pointing out, this is a very documented story, and readers, in order to get an idea of history that they don't get in the mainstream, they need to read this to see what can happen. And finally, that in order to really find out what happened to Patton, I think we need to exhume his body, as they have done so in other great historical figures, and see whether there's poison in his body to finally put this to rest. Otherwise, this story is absolutely the evidence mounts and mounts and mounts and mounts that he was assassinated.
And, of course, the thing is, they can't let the American people know that. Why, we would begin to question so many other things and so many of the other strange deaths. And there are a lot of people, for instance, who think there have been one of our recent presidents was assassinated. Well, we won't get into that, but certainly they do not want this story out, and I think that they're doing a pretty good job. You don't have any connections over there, Regnery, that could help us get the books?
I'll give them a call, and I don't understand that. But, you know, their business is selling the book, and I don't know how they treat that.
You can't sell books if you won't return the calls from people who want to
buy them. We'll give them a call and see what's going on.
Well, we'd really appreciate that, because we really would like to carry the book. We think it's important. We're going to feature our interview with you on our distribute our tape of the month club. Anyway, you will be considered. You will be at the top of the list for our tapes of this month. It's been fascinating talking to you, and I look forward. If anything ever comes up again, why don't hesitate to call me. We'd love to have you back on again.
Thanks a lot, Doc. Dr. Stan, I really appreciate it.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, fine. Well, that was Mr. Robert Wilcock. We hope you've enjoyed. This is my fourth interview with him. He was very, very kind. And, of course, we'll be playing him on our weekend program. We'll be playing him on our morning program, our evening program. And now you've heard, of course, the afternoon program. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we do hope, of course, you enjoyed our program with Mr. Wilcox. We do talk through the breaks, and we actually have two interviews with him that are available from Radio Liberty. But the idea of people being assassinated, well, we have a wonderful four-tape set on the murder of Martin Luther King. He was murdered. There was a trial. And you never heard a word about it. How could you possibly suppress a four-month trial with 50 witnesses going into the background of the murder, the assassination of Martin Luther King? Why, we have freedom of the press in America, ladies and gentlemen. And when you own the press, you have the freedom to suppress whatever you want to, and there's a small group of people that controls the medium. That's why Mr. Wilcox's book is never mentioned in the medium. We actually have a four-tape set now, four CDs out on the Liberty, the USS Liberty that was sent off the coast of Sinai in the 67 war, and the plan was to sink the ship and kill everybody on board. And our people at the highest levels of our government were involved, and the crew members were threatened with being killed if they ever revealed what happened. The crew members, those who survived the attack, and 34 died, 170 were wounded, they were all threatened with either going to prison or worse, and they knew what worse was, that was being killed. If they ever dared to reveal what happened, well, they've come forward, and we have a great four-tape set. We have a DVD, we have a video, and, of course, we have a syllabus. And you can get the Liberty Special from Radio Liberty, or the four-tape set on Martin Luther King and the book that goes with that. It's called An Act of State by the man who was hired by Martin Luther King's family to bring out the fact that he was killed by the mafia who are working for the CIA. But then the mafia always does the hits for the CIA, ladies and gentlemen, the greatest criminal combination in the world today and the greatest purveyor of drugs. That's why Gary Webb supposedly killed himself by shooting himself in the head twice because he exposed the CIA's involvement in drugs. We have a great four-tape set on, is there really a war on drugs? Because if there's a war on drugs, why are there more drugs than we've ever had before? Why, when America operates controls Afghanistan, we can't stop the drugs? When the Taliban were there and controlled, they stopped the drugs. But all shucks, we just have no idea to do it. We're just so incompetent. And if you believe that, you're incredibly naive. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We've got a great Kennedy special. We've got a DVD. We've got a couple of books. We've got two four-tape sets. Interviews with Lee Harvey Oswald. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, with Lee Harvey Oswald and with Lyndon Johnson's mistress before she passed away. So much available from Radio Liberty. We've got a great new DVD. You've got to see it. We've been waiting for months. It's called The Eye of the Phoenix. And it talks about the emblems, the occult emblems on the back of the dollar bill. And if you don't know anything about them, you need to get the DVD. It's 2 hours and 50 minutes. It's spellbinding. It's put out by our good friend Chris Pinto, who put out The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings and Riddles in Stone, both of which we have. But I think The Eye of the Phoenix, if you're only going to get one, get that one. You ought to have all three of them. And you have to understand that behind everything going on, there are powerful secret societies. And they trace back to the mystery religions of antiquity. And what is their goal? To bring about a one-world government, a one-world economic system, a one-world religion, which is why they took God and prayer out of our schools and the Ten Commandments out of our schools and why Christianity is constantly ridiculed in the controlled media and, of course, why they pick our religious leaders for this. And, of course, they've infiltrated our seminaries, the Catholic seminaries, and that's why there's so much homosexuality and pedophilia, and they've infiltrated the Protestant seminaries. We've got real problems, ladies and gentlemen. Go to our website at radioliberty.com, and then, of course, we Oh, hope that you'll tell others, get them to listen to our programs. Try to prove us wrong. Get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, because...